From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 11th day of April 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll check the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenner at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, and he'll take us a bit around the planet, mostly to Australia, where they've been suffering through a drought, and we'll have some discussion points there. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll also discuss what's been happening with the cash grain market. We'll be joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds, agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
You're more than welcome, Todd.
Do you have sunshine there in Texas or just a whole lot of wind and a lot of dust?
Actually, Texas has got some pretty nice weather right now. I mean, we don't have no dust. We've had some good rains, and everything's growing like a weed. We got corn up and running anywhere from knee high to shoulder high, depending upon what part of the state you're in. So things are actually looking halfway decent for Texas. When you take a look at what's going on in the Midwest and the upper growing region, there's not a whole lot of activity has taken place.
What did you think of the marketplace today and this week so far, including the numbers that came out from USDA?
Well, the USDA numbers were pretty well baked in the cake because, you know, the stocks report was the shocker. So the stocks report already priced in what USDA was going to say. So there was really nothing earth-shattering in USDA's reports. So it was pretty well baked in the cake. I suppose the thing that maybe got into the trade a little bit here today was the South American crop looks like it's off going to be pretty good size, both soybeans and corn. That's just going to be more world supply that's going to be coming at us. And we just got too much stuff around. And with that extra 300 million bushels of corn or so that USDA found, and then the way our export activity is going, the trade has to kind of bet that the ending stocks are growing, and that may be the case in soybeans. We will have to kind of see whether or not we can get a China deal here. Now, when I take a look at the chart, one can see maybe a developing bullish pattern in the soybean chart that soybeans might be able to kind of take off and rally here a little bit. I don't see a whole lot in corn. I think corn just took a bad hit after that USDA's report. And I know some farmers are probably getting antsy and worried over corn plantings, but the market, the earliest that I would expect that market to respond to any concerns about corn plantings would be probably after the first week of May, and that depends upon how far we're planted. I mean, May 1 will be a critical time to see how much corn has been planted, and then once you get into about the May 10th period, then that's another critical point. Then May 20th is kind of the deadline. That's when the market, in the past anyway, has kind of taken off, usually sometime around May 20th or when the May contract expires. But we got a ways to go before that's a big worry. But there's no doubt about it. The upper Midwest is getting a big snowstorm now, and it's going to be a while before a lot of those people get into the field. And we got problems even in the southern growing regions where it's just getting late and too much rain. And so it's going to be an interesting year to see how many acres actually get planted and how off the crop gets started. But we're just a shade early for the market to really worry about that, given the supplies that we have on hand and what the supplies are coming out of South America. So nobody's going to be worried too much about running out of grain at this time.
You mentioned the CONAB numbers that were released, and that's the Brazilian counterpart to the United States Department of Agriculture. They released a set of numbers this morning. I did some translation from Portuguese. Well, Google did some translation from Portuguese for me. Some interesting things that they had to say in their commentary. That the first crop corn had not been sold as quickly as they expected. I think they made note that there was a lot more left on price than expected, and that the second crop was off to such a really good start that their number that they reported from today probably would grow in the future. Both of those I thought were interesting facts. Of course, that second crop goes primarily into the export market. They also suggested that the ethanol production in Brazil should ramp up, but not as quickly as they had hoped, and there might be some extra bushels laying around that were thought to be consumed at some point. So there are lots of things that are on the line, I suppose, for the American farmer, whether they're in North or South America this time, for both corn and soybean crops.
It's we're in the hangover stages of the very profitable era of the double O's. It's going to take a while for this to work itself out. The only thing that'll bail us out will probably be a big short crop somewhere down the line. And a big crop really doesn't bail anybody out. It shortens up the supply. But that's kind of what we're waiting around. I mean, that's what we waited for in the 80s. Of course, the 80s, we did put some ground in the conservation acreage reserve. And then the 88 drought came along, and all of a sudden, supplies were tight again. But that's kind of where we're at. We're just in the hangover of the very profitable years of the double O's that increased world acreage, world production. And that's where we're at in the cycle. And it's going to be a while for us to work our way out of this thing.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well, Todd.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and joins us here on this Thursday afternoon. In today's agricultural news, at 11 a.m. this morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released the 2017 Ag Census, and it looks for the first time at young farmers. Stephanie Ho has more from USDA.
Ag Statistics Board Chair Joe Parsons points to some of the demographic findings in the 2017 Census of Agriculture.
One of the things I thought was really interesting out of this census is we have a new set of tables around young producers.
He says a map of young people, those under 35 years old, shows there are more of them in the northern part of the country.
Farms that have young producers tend to be larger than average, both in terms of acres and also in terms of the value of production. And one way to think of this is often these farms are going to be sizable enough to support multiple family generations.
Meanwhile, the 2017 Ag Census shows the trend of aging on farms continues.
The 2017 census shows an aging producer population, with the average age increasing about 1 year per census cycle. The average age of primary producers increased from 58.3 in 2012 to 59.4 in 2017.
There's more information online at nas.usda.gov/agcensus. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Here are a few of the other demographic, economic, land, and activities insights that were collected from the 2017 Census of Agriculture. There are 2.04 million farms and ranches. That's down 3.2% from 2012, with an average size of 441 acres. That's up 1.6% on some 9 million acres around the nation. The 273,000 smallest farms, between 1 and 9 acres, make up 0.1% of all farmland, while 85,127 of the largest farms, 2,000 or more acres, make up 58% of the farmland. Just 105,453 farms produced 75% of all sales in 2017. That's down from 119,908 in the 2012 census. Of the 2.04 million farms and ranches, the 76,865 making $1 million or more in 2017 represented just over two-thirds of the $389 billion in total value of production, while the 1.56 million operations making under $50,000 represent just 2.9%. And finally, 96% of farms and ranches around the nation are family-owned. Well, let's stay now in Washington, D.C., where some lawmakers say it's finally time to fund an update of the Upper Mississippi and Illinois River lock and dam system that was first authorized in 2007. More than a decade is long enough to wait, complain lawmakers from Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, and Wisconsin who've written House and Senate appropriators to get off the dime and fund Upper Mississippi Lock's modernization, says Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
It's important that the rest of the funding be provided so that we are ready to go to construction in the next several years as this project moves to the top of the Inland Waterways User Board list. We must have these improvements to our water infrastructure on the Mississippi River in order to maintain our international competitiveness and to ensure the safe and efficient movement of our goods.
Nearly three-quarters of U.S. farm exports were carried on U.S. waterways in 2015, while ag exports account for about one-fourth of farm cash receipts. And finally today, news from one of those businesses that heavily uses the locks and dam system. ADM, or Archer Daniels Midland, is looking to cut its workforce through voluntary early retirements by some North American employees. The company may also eliminate individual jobs as part of a restructuring of specific areas. The actions are needed to strengthen ADM's core business and establish the company as a global leader in nutrition. That according to a company statement. The company pointed out that contrary to rumors, it is not considering the sale of its grain handling business. ADM expects the number of workers whose jobs are eliminated to be a very small percentage of its global workforce. ADM employs nearly 32,000 people worldwide. A couple of other notes. The company has been trying to sell two U.S. dry ethanol mills since 2016. The company's nutrition unit manufactures, sells, and distributes natural flavor ingredients and other specialty products. The segment posted an operating profit of some $339 million last year, compared to $546 million for its origination business, which includes grain handling. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, the flooding in Nebraska has caused all kinds of problems. We've heard some about the farms and even about the ethanol plants. Those plants have been struggling with way too much product on hand as it's been difficult to move. Troy Bredenkamp is the executive director of the Renewable Fuels of Nebraska. He says the biggest problem for the state's ethanol plants is a lack of rail service due to the flooding.
Well, I would say by far at this point, with the aftermath of the flooding and natural disasters, been rail service. We had quite a few plants, up to five, knocked offline. A couple of those had direct flooding impacts, but most of them was indirect due to just the lack of rail service. We had a significant portions of our rail infrastructure damaged due to the floodwaters.
As most people would expect, the flooding really put a dent in the state's ethanol production.
That obviously had an impact on our production numbers. We continued to produce. Those plants that could produce until they ran out of storage or places to put it. And so that's what we've seen off and on throughout this last 2 to 3 weeks. Some of those plants that have gotten rail service back are starting to come back online.
Bredenkamp says a slowdown in ethanol shipments is unfairly being blamed for a rising gas price around the nation.
It's unfortunate, I think, that ethanol is being used as a scapegoat when it comes to price of gasoline in California, for instance. Yeah, I've seen several articles that due to the flooding and lack of ethanol, that's the reason why there's $4 gas in California. And I would argue, well, ethanol futures are dropping by the day. Production comes back online, so we're down to almost at a break even again. We're sitting on more ethanol than we know what to do with. Shipments are picking up to the coast, and while there has been a bump, I think I was told it's probably about a 50 cents per gallon of ethanol bump to get that to California right now. Put that over an E10 blend perspective, that's 5 cents a gallon.
As they find more rail cars to help, it shouldn't take a long time to get through the backlog of ethanol storage.
I know from a storage perspective, we were full. We had almost every plant that was running was filled to the gills. So we were putting it anywhere we can. We even had several plants that were transshipping from maybe a plant that was landlocked without rail service, was trucking it to other plants that did have rail service. trying to ship it out that way. And I know several did it that way for a period of time until it just economically wasn't making any sense to do that. So wait for the rail to come back and then they'll get the plant back up and running.
That's Renewable Fuels Nebraska Executive Director Troy Bradenkamp. Well, let's check the cash grain market on this Thursday afternoon. We are joined by Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So I'm going to start not with the grains, but with livestock, because there was a really big export of pork to China over the last week or so. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking 77,000, 78,000metric tons, which is huge. Definitely the largest we've ever seen. And the total export number was, I think, around 95, 96. And regardless, you know, obviously China took the lion's share of that. And so definitely got the market excited when we opened livestock. You know, June was up the limit. And so we didn't end up closing up the limit. But bottom line, you're still looking at, you know, almost $98 hogs after the June. And so, yeah, this hog market's been wildly volatile, but there's no question that looking at the kind of losses that they've got, boy, you'd have a hard time being bearish right now.
And so mostly the question was not when, but or not if, but when they would purchase. Now, how long do you think that they'll be in the marketplace for, do you suppose?
Oh, gosh. Some of the recent cases in the past of this African swine fever, it took years to eradicate. So, let's hope that things have improved to where that's not the case for them. But bottom line, they could be in the market for a long time, not just for pork, but for beef as well, you know, poultry, you name it. But they've got a huge appetite for protein, and they're going to be in sourcing that wherever they can find it.
Earlier in this week on Twitter, you posted a tweet that said, you know, basis has been tightening in some places for corn, and this was a way that you used to be able to make money in the elevators, and there were strategies to make your bins on the farm money-making machines. Can you tell me what you had in mind?
Well, first and foremost, you know, I think we need to be cautious to give up ownership of our corn too easily. You know, the only way that really an elevator can make money is to get ownership of the bushels. And so, for us, the way that we were able to make money on our storage space was to sell the carry in the market once we had ownership of those bushels. And then we waited until, you know, in our case, Decatur ADM wanted the corn a heck of a lot more than what they wanted it whenever we initially entered into our hedge. And so, you know, if I'm a producer on the farm, the first thing, I don't want to give up my corn too easily. Remember, cash is king, because when you get into this time of year, when movement's slow, we've seen some really good basis pushes, and it's helped to offset this lackadaisical and lackluster futures market. And so the main thing is selling the carry in the market and waiting on basis to come to you.
How do you sell the carry in the market?
Well, you can sell March, May, July, but right now you're looking DEES 19 to July 20 at about 28 cents. And historically, that's pretty rich. And so we've seen a lot of producers locking that in. I know with the Board of Trade talking about increasing building a little bit more into that carry, some people are afraid it could go over 30 cents. But, regardless, 28 cents, a heck of a carry in the market.
What'd you think of the trade in Chicago for today for both corn and soybeans?
Oh, frustrating. The corn market down a couple cents. You know, we've seen worse days by all means, but it looked like we might be trying to build a little bit of momentum and just couldn't get anything going. Money's on the sidelines. We need some sort of definitive action with this Chinese-U.S. trade deal. Everybody's tired of talking about it, tired of hearing about it. But the money's on the sidelines until we hear more there. Weather probably won't become a factor for at least a couple more weeks. If we're still wet then, with a wet forecast, yeah, you're probably going to see some excitement.
Hey, thanks so much, Matt. Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this 11th day of April. It's a Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Tenera. He's at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. Tell me about the forecast for the Midwest.
Well, there's a lot of rain in the forecast. We have a number of storm systems that will move on through about every 3 to 5 days going forward. So because of that, we do have some fairly significant rainfall that is on the way. The first round of rain will be in Illinois later today and tonight. Then we see a much larger and stronger system move through Saturday and Sunday, followed by yet another storm system Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday of next week, and then most likely another system about 3 to 5 days after that. So we're looking for pretty hefty totals in the Corn Belt. 1.5 to 3.5 inches looks about right, with heavier totals to the south in the Delta.
And if you look a little further out, what problems do you see?
Well, it's real hard to say what's going to happen more than 2 weeks out. I keep receiving a lot of questions about that time period, but even though it is very important for planting, we don't have any special skills to forecast that far out than we do at any other time of the year. So unfortunately, we just have to sit around and kind of wait and see what it looks like. The one thing we can tell you is that this wet period has been going on for a long time now. Last month was the 8th consecutive month of above normal rainfall in the Corn Belt, and all indications are that April will end up wetter than normal as well. That'll make that entire June through April period, because that's essentially when this pattern started, last June. Well, if you start last June and you go through this April, we can see that it's going to end up being the number one or number two wettest period of the last 125 years. That's a lot of water that has fallen. And if you start to isolate out some of those years and look at what happened in the growing seasons that followed, well, about one third of those had some pretty poor corn and soybean crops. On the other hand, two thirds of them had normal or good crops. So it's a little hard to say what's going to happen, but in any normal year, the chance of having a poor crop is only about 15%. But our data is showing that based on what's happened to this point, it's closer to 33%, or a little more than double normal. So we're going to have to keep an eye on weather later on in the spring and especially the summer.
Are there any other places that you've been watching around the planet at this point?
Well, the only other area that we're a little bit concerned about at the moment is Australia. Australia has been in a drought now for a while. In fact, 87% of their winter wheat production was drier than normal over the last 90 days, based on some of our in-house calculations. They start planting there over the next 2 to 4 weeks, and there's not a whole lot of rain on the near-term horizon. Probably more importantly for them, though, is that it's fairly probable for weak El Nino conditions to last over the next 6 to 12 months. And 3 of the last 4 times that happened in Australia, they had a below-trend wheat yield. So again, we have a drought in there now. We know the history of El Nino conditions. Again, 3 of 4 were below trend, and we're in a similar scenario right now as far as El Nino goes. So all indications are that you have to watch out in Australia as well.
Hey, thanks, Mike. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds great, Todd. Talk to you then.
That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.